So hi everybody, thanks for coming in. It looks 1 o'clock by my count, and I tend to ramble on, so in hopes of actually finishing and leaving enough time for questions, let's go ahead and get started. My name is EJ Bastian. I'm the lead eDiscovery program manager in Microsoft's internal litigation department. So I don't work in IT, actually, you know, work more with the lawyers directly, helping us actually manage our internal eDiscovery efforts. And over the years, I've spent a lot of time with the product teams talking about e-discovery and what I need to be able to get my job done natively in the applications themselves. So I've gotten to do a lot of beta testing and a lot of design and usability studies. But I'm think of me as essentially customer zero for the e-discovery features at Microsoft. And I'm here today to talk to you about how we do it. What are we using to actually accomplish our e-discovery needs behind the firewall? So this might be a familiar graphic to a lot of you if you're familiar with e-discovery. It's the age-old now, and by age-old, I guess, I mean 10 or 11 years, but e-discovery's not all that old. The e-discovery reference model, the way that the e-discovery ecosystem, the industry has described our quote-unquote linear workflow, right? The process is starting at the far left and progressing across to the right, and each stage along the way that has to go sequentially, or at least that was the assumption when they made this so long ago. A lot of it's been front-loaded, especially with the eDiscovery features that are available in Office 365 and Exchange 2013 and SharePoint 2013. But the idea originally was that, you know, you've got your data behind the firewall where your end users are creating it and managing it, and you've got your policies that dictate how that data is retained in place, before a legal hold ever comes about. And then there's some sort of legal event, you get sued, or you get sufficient warning that you're about to get sued, and so you want to apply a litigation hold. And then you've got, to identify the various sources in your enterprise across your network where potentially relevant data might live, right? And then they thought, well, once you know where the data is, the first step you have to do is to collect it so you can preserve it. That's one of the items, one of the workflows that we've addressed in Office 365 and the latest versions of Exchange and SharePoint, where you can actually protect content in place. But the idea was you'd go gather a copy of the custodian's data from all the various sources and hold on to it so that the lawyers can be absolutely certain they've got what they need. And then when it comes time to determine whether a document is responsive versus non-responsive, the lawyers would go and search their collected copy. They'd reprocess it in an offline tool, be able to extract the text, run some searches against it to be able to determine whether or not it's actually worth reviewing, right? A lot of the stuff can be electronically culled away by keyword searches or other filters you can apply to it electronically to narrow down to the small subset of the custodian's raw data that actually is worth the attorney's time to read through line by line to determine whether or not this is actually relevant to the lawsuit. So that's that stack, right? And they go through the documents, analyze what the content really is, see if there's deficiencies or gaps in their review set and their ultimate production set, and then hand the data off that needs to get produced to the other side to a lit support vendor who's going to, convert the data into a near-native format, essentially handing off an electronic equivalent of a piece of paper that can't be manipulated or edited, and then ultimately presented to the other side. A lot of this has been front-loaded, but at Microsoft, we are responsible as FTEs at Microsoft on the litigation team. There's five of us, really. And a director of eDiscovery who's sitting right back there, and in his four reports, the eDiscovery PMs who are responsible for managing the items in blue at Microsoft. We found this to be the kind of sweet spot for in-house e-discovery. We explored the concept of bringing the review hosting in-house. I mean, we don't have enough FTEs in the litigation group to be able to scale up to have 50 or 60 review attorneys to sit there and go through page by page to determine if this document's responsive or that document's privileged. So we always, outsource that. But we explored bringing the review component in and licensing a review tool, hosting that behind the firewall, and batching the data that we actually want to make available to those review attorneys, right, those teams of 50, 60 attorneys who are just doing nothing but reading all day long and hating their lives. We explored bringing that in-house and hosting it ourselves and found really quickly that we didn't have the infrastructure behind the firewall for it to be able to scale up to handle massive review projects that often have really short deadlines and take, you know, take a lot of different servers, distributing the workload across a lot of different machines, appliances, to be able to actually effectively do that ourselves. It wound up being a little bit cheaper to actually outsource that end of the work to a trusted litigation support vendor who hosts the review work for us when the time comes. So everything else we do ourselves. Obviously, before there's litigation, right, the information management, we set the policies on the systems determining how long the data should actually live. But then we issue our own legal hold notices. We work with the custodians to identify all the various sources that we actually need to know about from an e-discovery perspective. One of the major things we've done to control costs is to have our attorneys get involved and real early in the case to speak with the custodians, to interact and interview them on the topics of where would the data actually be, right? I mean, we don't want to search everything. We don't want to go search every mailbox in our 180,000 mailbox organization and every SharePoint site. We want them to identify all the, say, here's what we're looking for, here's the lawsuit, you know, here's what the other side is alleging. We need to find all the data that's potentially relevant to that. And they'll give us a finite list of sources that we need to go search. We'll preserve that content in place. We'll take advantage of the existing search architecture to search it in place as well. So I don't have to just export everything and process it like I used to. And we'll find the potentially relevant data set that we actually want to pay our review attorneys to go through page by page, make their decisions on. And we just outsource that data, hand that off to a litigation support vendor. 99% of the time we're using a company called Lighthouse eDiscovery. And we just FTP them the data. They load it into a review tool. 99% of the time we're using KCura's Relativity for that. So they take what we've given them, put in a Relativity, batch it out for the contract review attorneys. All that's happening outside the firewall behind, you know, without FTE involvement, right? Our job is to protect the content in place, find the small subset that actually merits the risk and cost associated with it, taking the content out of our firewall and handing it off to the lit support vendor to get in front of the lawyers. Back in 2008, when the economy fell apart, we were charged with cutting millions of dollars out of our litigation budget. And one of the first things that we did was bring e-discovery efforts in-house. So instead of just doing the collection, outsourcing everything from that point forward, we started doing the preservation, the processing ourselves as well to start saving millions of dollars a year. And so a slide about why, right? The business justification. As Quentin presented, if you guys were here yesterday, the average company that's making over $1 billion in revenue a year has an average of 147 different lawsuits that are active at any time. Microsoft actually has almost three times that are active. And those aren't fully represented here. I'm talking about just the cases that have active e-discovery efforts. So we analyzed our docket over the last 3 years and looked at the cases that have had more than preservation work, but I mean actually search and review work. And there's been an average of 68 cases per year. And the average case breaks down as follows, right? We're usually placing about 45 people under hold, right? We're issuing legal hold notices to these people saying we've been sued, the other side's alleging this, we need you to keep all your documents related to these topics. That goes out, you know, as soon as possible once we know that we've been sued or that we're likely to get sued. The average Microsoftie has about 30.1 gigabytes of searchable, processable data. And so by searchable and processable, I mean I'm excluding the system files, known files, right, that the other companies called, you know, the things that are on the NIST list, if you're familiar with that term. Also their media files, right? I don't need to collect a custodian's pictures of their kids or their media files. I'm just getting the actual searchable, processable data that they have. And Microsofties have a lot at 30.1 gigs. And so with 45 people under hold, we're talking about a corpus of 1.3 terabytes of data per case that's being held. So you see, if we had to go out and collect and preserve an offline copy of that content, it would swell real high real quickly. So as I said before, we work with our attorneys and have them identify, through close partnership with the custodians, the actually relevant search custodians whose data we should really be focusing in on when we need to respond to discovery requests. And so the average difference between the 45 people who are held is it breaks down to only 13 people whose data we're actually searching for any given case, average case. Some are much bigger. I've had a case that had 180 custodians. But 13 is our average. And boiling it down to the average volume per case, we're talking about just shy of 290 gigabytes per case. If we did what we used to do, right, which is to just handle the collection, just get a complete copy of everything those custodians have, each of those 13 people, and not filter it at all, but just collect it and hand that off to a lit support vendor and pay rack rates to process it, the first thing they do is put it into a processing tool, right, like Nuix or Clearwell or eCapture. There's any number of them where they just take that content they've gotten and they index it, right? They extract the content, they extract the text from the data that we've sent them, and then they start running searches to determine what the attorneys actually need to review. They charge us a rack rate of about $200 per gigabyte just to do that, right? So we take 100% of our custodians' data, hand that over the firewall, incur a $200 per gigabyte charge on all 288.8 gigs. So we're talking about just shy of $60,000 in processing charges per case, processing charges alone. Not this has nothing to do with the review charges that we're going to see later or the production charges. This is just processing, right? And so with 68 cases, we're talking about $3.9 million a year in processing charges. If we were to take 68 cases, 288 gigs per case, hand that all off at $200 a gig, $3.9 million a year. Now, it's expensive, but it's also ridiculous from a security perspective to take all that data, right, and hand that off to some, yeah, sure, they're trusted body, but they don't have the same corporate standards that we do. They don't have the same firewall. They don't have the same protections that our own internal IT department came up with to determine what's appropriate to protect our content, right? So it's not just a cost. There's a security risk associated with that as well, which, you know, if any of our security officers knew that we were doing that back when we did that before 2009 rolled around, there'd be a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of really unpleasant feelings, a lot of sick stomachs. Anyway, what we actually found is that the average cull over our cases for the last 3 years has been 95%, meaning that only 5% of our custodians' data has actually been deemed relevant to actually be worth reviewing in any given case, right? Some cases have worse culls, some cases have even higher culls, but 95 has been the average. So we're handing off only 5% of our custodians' raw data, or 16.8 gigabytes, right? So instead of paying $200 per gig for, you know, 288, we're paying about $200 per gig for just the 16.8 gigs, right? Reducing our processing charges for that case down to just over $3,000 for the case, and with 68 cases a year, we're talking about a savings of $3.7 million just in doing the processing work alone. You might be thinking, 95% reduction, wow, that seems aggressive. Microsofties have access to a lot of data. A lot of it has no relevance whatsoever to their job. We've got a lot of very active distribution lists. People talk about a lot of things that they're interested in that doesn't really have to do with their job. That's cluttering their inbox. They also work on a lot of different things, right? And we're only sued on hopefully narrow, easily defined subjects. It's not always the case. But when we work with counsel to find the data that we really think is worthwhile to have them review, we're talking about a reduction of 95%, right? So we're achieving that savings, but we're also finding that when we look at the cases as they progress, even though we're handing off 17 gigs of data to be reviewed, only 4 of those gigs are actually producible, right? They're actually responsive, non-privileged items, 4 gigs. So that's just less than 25% of the 5% of the data that we're handing off that's actually relevant to the lawsuit. And then, you know, statistically, only 1 out of 1,000 produced documents ever see the light of day as an exhibit in a case, right, either in being presented at court or in a deposition. So all that work, right, preserving 1.3 terabytes of content just to find that actually relevant core group of 250 documents, it's a lot of work for just that little teeny tiny tip of the iceberg that the lawyers litigate over. But you can see just how important it is to have us cull away the irrelevant content as best and aggressively as possible before handing it off and incurring the charges, right? That's where we get a lot of the bang for our buck, and that's why we do e-discovery the way we do. And we were doing this before we had the ability to do it natively. Back in 2009, Gartner published a report saying that if you bring e-discovery processing work in-house, you'll see an ROI in 3 to 9 months, right? The offline tool that you bring in will pay for itself in 3 to 9 months. And when we were told to cut millions of dollars out of our litigation budget, we just went and licensed an off-the-shelf tool because there was no way to easily search across all of the custodian data that we had, right? Back then, we did have Exchange 2010 out, and that had cross-mailbox search, and we could use that to a certain extent, but a lot of the time the lawyers would be asking us to run search terms and queries that were more sophisticated than we could actually run with Exchange 2010, right? Proximity operators were really common. Large sophisticated queries were really common. So we found ourselves in a situation where we would use in-place hold for Exchange mailboxes on Exchange 2010, but all the searching would be done offline. And so day one, the attorneys say, here's your 13 custodians, go get all their data and run these search terms against it. We'd have to send a paralegal out to collect the content from all the various locations where our custodians were maintaining that data, right? So they'd extract a full copy of the mailbox, right? The custodians exchange mailboxes. They'd image the hard drives. SharePoint 2010 and earlier versions were really an e-discovery thorn in my side, to put it mildly. There was no way of exporting content in bulk. So our paralegals would really kind of beat their head against the walls trying to extract the content that they need, that we need to run our searches across. Obviously Microsoft used a lot of SharePoint sources, and it's not something we could just simply ignore. So they'd harvest the doc libraries and the pages. They'd have to do single width, navigate to the page, do a save as, single web page archive, and bring that back. They'd extract content from file shares and really anywhere else our custodians are maintaining the data, and they'd bring a copy of that, right? A working copy of that, and they'd load it into a litigation data repository that we're storing at an off-site data center, and it's really just a series of Windows file shares. We'd organize the content by custodian, by collection, so the content we collected from Steve Ballmer yesterday was merged with the data that we collected from him 2 years ago. All the content would just live there and be held until all the legal holds that apply to that data could be lifted. Then, once the data is all collected, I would take a third working copy of that content for those 13 custodians and load that into my data minimization tool, right? And then I'd spend the next week or two processing the data there. Remediating the big container files that inevitably get corrupt when you're moving it from disk to disk to disk, right? So I'm spending a ton of time running ScanPST or AOR, a ton of time researching what I've preliminarily processed and indexed to find what was encrypted, what could I not search natively, and then export that out, run it through a decryption process, re-upload it, re-index it, and it became this feedback loop of kind of constant churn. I mean, there were periods of my life where I would work 8 weeks in a row, 16-hour days, 7 days a week, literally. I'm not exaggerating. Just because certain cases had aggressive deadlines and we just needed to get this content out the door. Again, we're saving so much money, it was worth it. But, it came at a cost. Going prematurely gray here. But we get the data searchable. I'd run the terms that the attorneys need me to run, report back hit-by-term reports saying, here's our average cull, here's the cull in this case. It looks like we're allowing too much stuff to pass through. Let's buckle down these terms and improve our cull. And then I'd export the potentially relevant subset out, hand that off to that lit support vendor, right? It goes to Lighthouse, they put it into the linear view tool. It goes before the review attorneys, they make their decisions. This document's responsive, that document's privileged, this document should be tagged attorney's eyes only. And they handle the production and the presentation all outside the firewall there, right? Made friends with this guy, Quentin, and a few others on the product team at the same time, and they talked to me about the pain points associated with this and why I had to do things a certain way. And they said, there's a lot of things that we think we could do for you better, right? We don't want you to have to collect everything in order to search it. Data lives in an already indexed state just because information workers need to search their own data. Why can't you tie into those already existing indexes? Why can't we protect content in place and allow people to manage their data as they want, but delete it, and we'll still preserve it in an immutable archive behind the scenes where they can't really see it or be affected by it, but you can still protect content in place, right? So they built that out. I said, I need to be able to run more robust searches. You really need to build out the query language, and we also need to have a consistent query language across sources, right? I don't want to have a different indexing technology between Exchange and SharePoint and where I'm doing all the rest of my searches, right? So they put a common search engine in fast in all those different locations, so I'm getting consistent search results. And they built out the query syntax for me to actually be able to support the kinds of queries that our attorneys were routinely asking for. And so with that, and the deployment of Office 365 at Microsoft, and the deployment of SharePoint 2013 and Exchange 2013 on-prem at Microsoft, because we're in a hybrid environment there, my workflow looks a lot more like this now, right? So you see, this part hasn't changed, right? What we outsource hasn't changed. We're still finding the potentially relevant data set, we're still exporting it in native, handing it off to the same lit support vendor who puts it in the same linear review tool, and it goes before the same contract review attorneys, and they don't feel any difference aside from the fact that, I didn't have to do a month of work before I could get them the data. I just, they make the request later that day or maybe the next day, I can actually comply with it. I can actually get them the data and they can start going on it a lot faster. But up here, my life got dramatically simpler as well, right? So I use SharePoint's eDiscovery Center as the main hub for my eDiscovery work. I go into my SharePoint eDiscovery Center site collection and I'll create a new case site for the particular case, and I'll bring in my sources, right, whether they're the SharePoint sites that I know about or the Exchange mailboxes that I know about, and I'll apply preservation, legal hold there, right, so the end users can continue collaborating on the documents, managing their mail however they want, deleting content however they want, and I've got it protected behind the scenes. Everything stays online, indexed, and searchable. I can even use that index to filter what I'm preserving for that given case. If I know enough about a case saying that I only have to hold the data that, fell between January 1st, 2010 to December 31st, 2011, that say foo or bar within 20 non-matching words of X or Y or Z, right? I can do that. And I can use that same interface to search file shares as well, right? And so the file shares become this catch-all. They're actually, right, as I said, the litigation data repository that we used to have to maintain, it grew to 67 terabytes of content while we were living in this world. We actually just brought those file shares outside of that data center, brought them to our on-prem environment, and spun up just a bunch of Windows Server file shares, and we just migrated the content from where they used to live to where they live now, and we've configured SharePoint on-prem to index that content, right? So it looks for newly added content every 15 minutes, starts indexing it, scanning it, and indexing it so that I can reach it from my SharePoint eDiscovery Center. So all the content that we've gotten over the years, protected there, and some litigation-managed file shares. Newly collected content, right? I mean, we've got a case where I didn't already have the data. I don't have to collect content from Exchange anymore or SharePoint anymore, but there's still some data sources that are not online, like local machines. The biggest, most obvious example. We'll send a paralegal out, they'll image the hard drive, bring the content back, and they'll take the non-PST data and just throw it onto those file shares. And then they'll take the PST data and we'll re-import that back into Exchange so that I can manage it through the SharePoint interface and get our eDiscovery work done, right? Run our calls, get the 5% of the data out to counsel. Where do we put the PST data? That goes back into Exchange mailboxes by custodian. Actually takes me, this is a great segue to this slide, because it's the what about slide, right? Everything that we're doing from an e-discovery perspective, is completely out of box. There's no customization. There's no secret sauce. There's nothing that makes my environment better than yours. I mean, all of our data, or the majority of our data, is up in Office 365 in the multi-tenant environment. So I'm just using the e-discovery functionality out of box. And this is the only thing that I've had to do as kind of a supplement to that, right, which is just associating with how do I catalog and manage the data that's offline. There's a question here, and then I'll get back to the slide.
We discovered exactly what you're describing between 2007 and 2010 Exchange. Structured query language was developed. Indexing was created. All that works great. My question for you is, do you believe that what's in place now is sufficient to your task?
Okay.
You find that it's a little bit buggy and a little bit unpredictable. Is
okay.
It going to get better?
So the question was, how trustworthy is the index, right? How good is the indexing technology? How well do I trust the search results? Do I feel that it's sufficient for Microsoft's own e-discovery efforts? So I'd answer that absolutely. I feel confident in my search results. The one thing, and I've done, in getting here, I did a ton of comparison testing between my old system and my new system, right? Making sure that my processes are not getting less defensible just because I want to start using something that's free to me as opposed to something I used to have to pay for.
Every time again to make sure.
Yeah, well, I got to the point where I, you know, convinced myself that it was trustworthy, but the one thing that I did, which I would, you know, recommend as a best practice to everybody here who's going to start using this for their own internal e-discovery efforts, is take advantage of the fact that you can include uncrawlable items in your export sets, right? So anytime I'm collecting content that I'm about to hand off to outside counsel, I'll include the index errors as well, and it'll download those at the same time from all the same sources, but in a segregated format, right? So I'll have the known hits that I'll download, and then I'll have the unknown items. And I'll do a little bit more work on those unknown items to make sure that they don't actually also, that they shouldn't have also hit on these search terms, but for the fact that FAST couldn't index them. I found that FAST has been great and reliable, and the target, I think, is to make it so that 95% of the data in a source is fully indexed, and there could be 5% of that content that's got at least some part of it that's not indexed. I mean, FAST obviously goes into attachments and in embedded files, et cetera. But if there's something that's password protected, or if there's some unrecognized file type, or maybe crosses a certain threshold, I don't think it's sufficient to just say, well, FAST couldn't index it, I don't have to care about it, right? I'm always cognizant of what I'm blind to, and I always think that it's part of a defensible process to actually go in and test the boundaries of my index and make sure that I'm taking the index errors and trying to fix them, right? Trying to remediate them, decrypting them if that's what's the problem, if it's a certain file type, if it requires OCR, getting that into a tool that has OCR that'll allow me to search that, right? So I'll take the known hits, get those to the attorneys day one, take the unknown hits and do a little bit more work on those, run the same searches and circle back to those, you know, hand whatever hits that may be off that. I mean, that was also my approach when I was using a non-Microsoft tool as the heart of my e-discovery approach as well, right? So I absolutely feel confident in the search results, but I'm always, always including the unsearchable items so that I can also do some work to test that, to make sure that I'm not just calling it a day before it's really time to. Right? So managing the offline content, right? One more question. How do we handle users that have left the company while under legal hold, right? That's the question? Or is it just users who've left? Okay.
Mailbox might still exist, but the news object has
okay.
been removed.
So if somebody leaves the company while they're under legal hold, we actually just make their mailbox inactive. So it's hidden from the address book, but it's still an active directory, and I can still search it and preserve it, right? So I don't have to collect it just because somebody's leaving. I'm not converting a PST and storing it offline like I used to. The mailbox stays online, it's just disabled so that no one can access it through OA or through Outlook. It can't send or receive new content. It's just available online for me to search until any and all cases that are related to it, right? that it's under legal hold for have been fully resolved, and then we can release legal hold and expunge it. Now, if somebody leaves the company who's not under legal hold, and we want to put them under legal hold after they left, we've got a window where something's recoverable for 30 days after they leave. It goes soft deleted for 14 days, and then it's ultimately recoverable for the next 16 days with a little bit more work. But that's my window, and if something is gone, if more than 30 days have lapsed from the time that somebody's left to the time that I've realized it and need to get their mailbox in their hold, gone is gone. I mean, it's not recoverable past that point. All right, so managing the offline content, right? This is the part that is kind of an add-on aside from the rest of the stuff that's built in. We just have a bunch of those Windows Server file shares. We created a SQL database and a web front end to help us catalog the content that's there. So when content gets collected, a paralegal goes out and they get the data and they bring it back and they, you know, copy it to a file share, a staging share, and then check it into this web front end, you know, to attribute it to the proper custodian. And it kicks off a job that's going to scan the system to see if that custodian already has data in the library. We call it the library. It's just the litigation repository where all our data is. And it'll move it from the staging share where they've placed it to the actual file share that's supposed to hold that custodian's data. It will monitor, it'll check the data that we've just recently collected and are uploading to see if there are any PST files. If there are, it'll generate a script that will have the arguments that we need to managing the import. We're just using the out-of-box functionality for PST import. It's new mailbox import request is the PowerShell commandlet. But it'll generate those scripts for us, and it'll tell us what mailbox it's supposed to go to. And then we'll run those scripts, import those PSTs back into those mailboxes, and then mark it complete. Not the actual user. So the question is, do we import it to the actual user's mailbox? No. They're going into a mailbox that litigation manages that's attributed to that custodian in name, but they don't have access to it. The thought behind that was they took it out of Exchange for a reason, right? They put it into a PST. They've probably got that PST themselves, but they don't want it back in their Exchange mailbox. We'll respect that. We need it back in Exchange so we can search it, and so we're going to create a litigation managed mailbox and pump the content back in there. And so when I have to search Steve Ballmer's data, right, I'll look him up in this tool, and it'll bring me a page that looks a lot like this, right? This is an anonymized screenshot that kind of has the basic information that I need. So when Steve Ballmer shows up as one of my 13 custodians for an average case, I consult this UI to determine all the locations where his data lives. So there's the mailbox that he uses day in, day out, right? SteveB@Microsoft.com, or at least that's what it was before he, you know, retired. Then there's also the other mailbox that holds his PST data. Because he was our CEO for so long and he's been collected from so many different times, our threshold for our mailboxes that hold the PST data at Microsoft was 125 gigabytes of capacity per mailbox. Right, that's what our Exchange team provisioned for us. And so because he had more than, you know, 125 gigs of PST content, we actually have a couple different mailboxes where his data is, right? So when I go to search Steve Ballmer's data, I add all three of these mailboxes as a source in my eDiscovery case, and then also this path here, right, this UNC, also anonymized, but it's just a link to this file share where all the data, all of his non-PST data still lives, organized as he maintained it, right, with all the metadata fully intact, organized by collection. But I'll take everything there, right, this root directory, and add that as a source in my eDiscovery case as well. So I'm searching that content that we've collected from him over the years, all of his mailbox content, his live mailbox, and any SharePoint locations that he's tipped me off to that are relevant to this particular case. And I'll add those all in an eDiscovery set in my SharePoint case for this, and I'll run all my searches across all those. Now, because Microsoft is a hybrid shop, and we've got an online environment and an on-prem environment, I actually have two eDiscovery centers. So I'll search the online content through the online eDiscovery center, And our mailboxes are all in Exchange Online, or at least the vast majority, I'd say 90% of our custodians' mailboxes are in Exchange Online. And certainly the mailboxes that we created that hold the PST content, those are all in Exchange Online. So I'll add those to my online Exchange or eDiscovery Center case. And then I'll create another corollary case on my on-prem eDiscovery Center where I'll add my file share and any other on-prem data that needs to be searched. But I'll just use the same search query in both areas, right? It's just copy paste and get it in there. But that's really it, right? That's the only non-out-of-box thing that we're doing that helps us do e-discovery internally at Microsoft. And everything else is just as you see it in SharePoint. So I thought it might be worthwhile to just do a quick demo of the eDiscovery Center in SharePoint. I know this is Exchange Conference, and it's scandalous to talk to you about, you know, really using SharePoint to do eDiscovery as opposed to, oh boy, I let that go to sleep. Forgive me. Let me sign back in. But that's really what's going on. And the name of the session is "How Does Microsoft Do Our Own eDiscovery?" So, bear with me. I know there are eDiscovery features in Exchange Online and Exchange 2013, and obviously those are actually at the heart of what's happening here in the SharePoint interface, right? SharePoint's making calls to Exchange, and that's where all the eDiscovery work for Exchange is being carried out. But I like the functionality and the interface a lot better in SharePoint, and it helps me reach more than just Exchange, because our custodians have more than just Exchange data, and I need to run my search against all of it, right? So I want a consistent search experience, and this is where I get it. So here we are at our eDiscovery Center, and we're out here on SharePoint.com. So this is a demo environment that's in SharePoint Online. But what I would do is create a new case site for a given case. So let's just do just that, right? Seconds later, I just fill in a couple details, and seconds later, I've got my case and can start working. And somebody's calling me. Hopefully, yeah. Let's ignore that. All right. So we'll just call this the mech demo for lack of creativity on my part today. And we'll give it a URL, and it's going to allow me to select what language I want it to be displayed in, and it's going to pre-select the eDiscovery case template that's going to bring in all the necessary web parts that are going to allow me to do my eDiscovery work actions on this page, right? They'll allow me to do the hit-by-term reports and the unified export and preservation in place, right? So I don't have really any thought here. I can assign unique permissions for this case, or I can just inherit the same permissions. And at Microsoft, because there are so few people who actually have permissions to even get to the eDiscovery Center and create an eDiscovery case, we just typically inherit the same permissions of the parent site, because I want, while I'm here talking to you guys at Mech, I don't want life to stop back there, and so I've got my counterparts covering for me while I'm here hanging out in the sun with you guys. So we're typically inheriting the same permissions, but the flexibility is there. If you want to make something, if something's so secret you can only allow one attorney to see it, flexibility is there. The last options are, do you want navigational inheritance? Do you want a link to our new page to show up on the root of the eDiscovery Center? And do we want a link back to the eDiscovery Center showing up at the top of this page? With so many active cases, I tend to not do that just because I don't want to have huge lists. I'd rather remember my URLs and be able to navigate back to those, so I don't clutter the view of a shared resource. But seconds later, we've got our case here, right? And I can add my sources and apply preservation in a couple seconds by creating an eDiscovery set here. And then I can build some queries down here to get in some intelligence, right? Test my search terms, refine them, and do unified export of all that content. So let's jump in and do a hypothetical investigation of our sales team. So we'll create an eDiscovery set, and we'll call it the sales team. The concept of an eDiscovery set is it's essentially an atomic unit of sources that you want to manage preservation for consistently across all the sources in that group. So take this for example. If we're adding the sources for our sales team here, we'll take our known list of sources, right? I mean, our attorneys have spoken with the folks on the sales team, and they've found out these are the people, and these are the sources that they use. So we go into this knowing who we're looking for. And I can add names by, you know, alias or by full display name. So I add Katie and Sarah, and I'll click this icon over here, and it validates for me that I actually do have permission to do this, right? It gives me a visual confirmation that I'm able to actually achieve what I need to with this. I've got the permissions, it's in the system, it knows what I'm looking for. I don't have to just accept on faith that my searches are actually going to do something, right? If I don't know exactly what I'm looking for, I can search Active Directory here, right, and click this icon, it'll bring up a page where I can run, you know, a full or partial search for sources, right? This will search my mailboxes, and it found the sales team distribution list, so I'll go ahead and add that, and it'll add all the individual mailboxes that are on it right now as individual sources for my case. I can use this to add up to 1,500 different mailbox sources, and, you know, with 45 people on average on hold at Microsoft, and yeah, sure, some of them might have multiple mailboxes because we've got their PST, the mailboxes that contain their offline PST data as well, but still far below the 1,500 limit that's here. I know some customers want to be able to search everything. That's just not the approach that we take internally at Microsoft. And then our locations are just as easy to add as the mailboxes. So I'll just copy a URL that somebody's given me for a site collection and similarly validate that over here, and I get the URL resolves to a friendly name of the site collection, and it gives me the green check mark over here indicating that I have the adequate permissions to be able to search this source, and you know, it's indexed and reachable through this interface. So again, I'm not having to accept that it's going to search just on faith, right? I've got confirmation that it's going to do what I expect it to do. If I don't have permissions or if it's not indexed in this environment, I'll get a big red error warning me that I'm not going to get to do what I really want to do here. So obviously I had to partner with IT to do the initial configuration to make sure that I could actually get this done, but once you front load the e-discovery efforts, it's there and ready for you. So I'll hit OK, and it'll bring me back out to the main page for the e-discovery set, and I'll start expanding the sources and doing a preliminary search. And in the background, you'll see some names that I entered proactively, right, specifically Sarah, Katie, Garth. But there's also names like Robin and Alex. They're just part of that DL, right? So it expands that and brings them on. So I'm not at risk of having them disassociated with the case if they leave that distribution list tomorrow. Now, the flip side to that is if somebody's added to that distribution list in the future, it's not automatically going to be added to my case. So that might be the one time that I want to come back and revise in a discovery set. But for what I'm adding today, these will be here for me until I come back and disable litigation hold. So it tells me how many individual items each source has and how much volume each source has and what the grand total is down here. And if what I wanted to do was simply enable in-place hold across all those sources and protect all 1,306 items that are there today and anything that gets added in the future, regardless of whether the end users want to delete it or not, I just hit enable in-place hold and save, and they're going to be protected. Obviously, that's a little bit blunt. So sometimes if I know enough about a case, I can use a preservation query there. I can use this to filter the data, right? And we tend to hold extremely broadly at Microsoft. I'd rather hold too much than run the risk of being accused of spoliating data and having, you know, not fulfilled my legal hold obligations. So I'll tend to apply a very broad filter, and I just copy and paste it in. Let's say that our sales, you know, the debacle is our sales team is having a problem with a company called Northwind who makes a product called Wingtip. And so we're going to take all the names of the people that we know that work at Northwind and a few keywords that will help us, you know, refine based on subject matter, right? Trade or Wingtip or Northwind, right? And common conjunctions there, acronyms. And use that as my hold filter. And so if I just hit get statistics, it'll run that search against my sources, and it tells me there are 549 items that are relevant or that are hit by some part of this query. So that's a little less than half of the content that's there. And that would feel pretty good for me, right? I tend not to be overly aggressive on what I'm culling from a preservation perspective. I get aggressive when I'm doing the later queries to determine what I'm going to actually review, but I'll hold pretty broadly in place. I can use start and end dates and author sender or domain filters here, and I can get more sophisticated with these search terms if I want, right? I can use all the robust query language they built out for me, but typically we go pretty basic at the preservation level. So if I want, I can, you know, click in and preview the results and see these items. As you probably saw, if you here, my guess is you're interested enough in eDiscovery that you also watch Quentin's demo, so you've seen, you know, how you can preview these items. So I won't bore you with that. But it helps me to refine my search query. If I'm getting, you know, too many hits, and I want to see, you know, are there common topics in these miss hits that I can add as a not clause? It just helps me refine my query on the fly with getting a little more information. So I'll check enable in place hold and just hit save, and we'll protect these 549 items across these seven sources, and anything that gets added in the future that comes in that says any one of those words or meets that query criteria, that'll also be held. So that's it from a preservation perspective, right? It's a set it and forget it type thing. In the future, if anything gets added that says those terms, it'll be protected. If anything comes in that's not fully indexed that the end user tries to purge, well, that'll also be held, right? Because if there's a search index error, if there's any indication that I might not, that an item could meet the query criteria, but I just don't know that because it's not fully indexed, that'll also be held. So I don't have to worry so much about content slipping through the cracks just because I can't maybe fully trust my index. So imagine some months have gone by and it's time to actually search the data that we've got preserved. So I'll create a new query to do just that. And you see the first thing that happens here is it's running a search. It's running a search to find the data that's been brought into the case, right? Because I filtered my preservation set, it ran that same query across the same sources to find the items that are responsive to that query. Now, if time had gone by, you'd imagine there would be more than the same 549 that we just applied preservation to, but since, you know, it's been 30 seconds, there's no new content. But it's going to refresh itself, and so you're always dealing with the actual data set, right? And so I'm dealing with a live index. Content exchange lives indexed up to, you know, I think it can be, there can be a lapse of only 3 minutes between an item's creation and when it's actually indexed. And in SharePoint, while it's configurable, Microsoft has it set up to index new content within every 15 minutes. So we're actually searching very, very live, up to the minute almost, indexes. In contrast, it's a sharp contrast to the old version of collecting, processing offline, and having to deal with that delta of what's been created since I did the initial collection that leads to more churn later on in the case. Now, if I need to search more broadly than that, I have the flexibility to rescope my query here. But I typically like to just search the overall corpus of what I got for the case. And we can give this query a name, so I can distinguish it against any other query that's run in this case down the line. But I'm just going to copy and paste in the search term that outside counsel asked me to run. We'll look for Northwind within 30 words in either direction of SalesStar, MarkStar, MKTG, or CompStar, or anything that says wingtip. And a few seconds later, we'll see that a subset of these 549 items that actually meets these query criteria shows up, right? So it found 38 items. Which is, you know, not very much, but a lot of the time outside counsel will ask us to run pretty blunt terms and then say, well, what part of that query is really driving the results? And in any other offline tool, what I used to use is when that question would come up, I'd have to recompile this search query so that I could, you know, rerun it as Northwind within 30 of SalesStar, or Northwind within 30 of MarkStar, or Northwind within 30 of MKTG, which was a nuisance for me, right? Just having to recompile queries just to get to the information that attorneys think you should be able to just grab out of the air. This will actually do it for me, right? I just click this plus icon and it'll expand the query for me and follow the query's logic and start reporting that 15 of my 38 items are being returned by Northwind within 30 of CompStar and 24 are coming from this particular combination, right? And I can refine this on the fly if I need to. But with a cull like 38, I mean, that's pretty great. I can also filter by item type down here, right? So let's say I just care about my communications. And I can apply that and cull the 13 results out of my 38 overall that are coming from exchange items to the 7 that actually meet these criteria. And I can further build my query down here based on participant or recipient or sender or subject. And then apply different filters to the SharePoint content, right? So let's say I, you know, care only about the web pages and the spreadsheets and the docs, right? And I can cull away the 8 items that don't match those file types there. And of course, those file extension filters are fluid, and it's based on the actual result set. So if there were PDFs in the result set, I'd get a PDF filter here. If there were, you know, Visio diagrams, I'd get a Visio filter there. And then, of course, more SharePoint-specific properties that I can filter on as well. And the items themselves show up over here, and I can click in and get a quick preview. But it's, again, not designed to be a review tool. I can't tag this for responsiveness, and I can't take an action on this but not this, right? I mean, it's not designed for that, nor do I even have time to really get that deep into the weeds on my case. Really, what I'm trying to do is find the data set that I actually want to get to my attorneys and let them make the decisions as quickly as possible. Right, so this just helps me when I need to get a quick glance to see if there's some subject matter that can help me isolate the false positives and exclude those based on a query revision. So at this point, I can save this query and come back to it in the future, or I can actually export it, which is what I wanted to do here, so that I can download a copy and hand it off to outside counsel, you know, within minutes. And it's going to give me a few options as to what my export should be. Do I want to deduplicate the exchange content? Do I want to include versions for the SharePoint sources if versioning was turned on those SharePoint sources? And then, as I was saying before, something I always do in production, right, include the items that are encrypted or have an unrecognized format so that I can make sure that I'm also processing what I'm blind to and not calling it a day before it's really time. So I won't, for the sake of time, we've got 9 minutes left, but I always do it. It's best practice. I recommend you guys do it. So I'll hit OK. And it'll ask one more time, do I want to download the items or do I want to download just a report? And if I download the results, it'll actually give me that report. So I'll do that. It'll pop a click once app. And because I'm logged in as somebody aside from myself, I have to sign in one more time here that you wouldn't have to do in real life. So just bear with me while I do this. So it'll ask me, where do I want to download this content to? I'll put it on my desktop in an MEC folder. But I can write it to anywhere that I have write permissions, right? So if I need to write it to a network file share, if I need to write it to an external hard drive that's just plugged in, and I can just, you know, download it there directly, unplug it, and hand it off to the attorneys if I want to do that. It'll tell me how much space I have available in the source and how much space I need, so I can monitor capacity and make sure that that's all going to, I'm not going to run into problems there. And then this is one last sign-in, which you actually would have to do. And so it'll authenticate that I have permission to do this, and it'll start downloading the content to this location. And if Windows will work for me, we'll actually look at what's happening in the download folder. Let me actually switch to a download that I did previously so we don't have to waste any precious time. Okay, well, there it goes. So it looks like nothing's happening, but if I change the view to show hidden items, it's actually creating a cache folder here where it's downloading lists of the items that it needs to download from all those sources. And then once it finalizes those lists, it'll actually start downloading the items themselves and move them out to non-hidden folders, right? My guess is that with this data set, it'll probably take 2 or 3 more minutes to actually finish. But we are low on time, so let's just jump into, let's look at the second oven that has the pre-cooked meal. It's going to download the items themselves in native format, and it'll also give me an export summary CSV that'll be a list of everything that we just did, right? So if I look at this, it's a CSV, so I get the pleasure of resizing my cells, but it logs what we just did. At the time, I was in a case called the GSK demo, and it gives a URL to the page where I did the searches and tracks the search export and gives a pointer to where I downloaded it to, and it memorializes my options for deduplication. So I didn't deduplicate, but this time I did include versions and I did include my uncrawlable content. I thought at the time I was going to download 21 items, but it actually downloaded 27 items. That's because I included it on the uncrawlable items. And it tells me who was logged into Windows and running this, and when it was started and when it finished, and whether there are any errors. There are 2 container errors and 9 item errors, so I know I'll also want to go check another log that was generated in my export set to make sure that I've got everything that I need to get. But, of course, I've got the confidence that because I did include my uncrawlable data, those errors would have been downloaded. Even if I can't search them, I'd have an offline copy of them, which I can then go remediate, which is another reason why I always just include that at the outset. It also logs the sources that I search, right? The full addresses of them, and then the friendly names, so I can tell these were the custodians searched, and then it tracks the queries that were applied to each of those custodians, and each source specifically. So from a chain of custody standpoint, when I hand this off with the data, the attorney who's receiving on the receiving end is going to see what was searched, who did it, when they did it, how they did it, what went wrong, what filters were applied. It tracks, you know, the query that we did at our query page and the query that we did for scoping our preservation set, right? So they're both documented here, in addition to the item type filtration that we applied, right? I chose emails and IMs for the exchange sources, and I chose a different subset of those for the SharePoint sources, right? And it's all memorialized here, so when I hand this off, the story is automatically told, right? It's there for me. I also have an EDRM XML load manifest file that logs each and every item in my download set. It's got a hash value of each, so I can use that to confirm that nothing happened to the items in the processing stage, right? So if somebody's going to accuse us of having doctored the items, well, if you hash them using the SHA-256 algorithm, you'll see that if it's been unaltered, it should come back with the exact same value, right? But it also logs all the native metadata that exists for each of these items that we downloaded, so we can use this as a load file when populating the review tool, whatever the review tool is that we want to put it in. So Clearwell can import directly from this. There can be easily attained transforms created to manage the import into tools like Relativity or Summation or any other tool, but EDRM XML is the only industry standard format in the eDiscovery ecosystem, so anybody who doesn't already know how to interact with it can just go out to edrm.net and get access to the schema there. And then the data itself, right? I didn't deduplicate, so the PSTs came out as individual PSTs per mailbox, right? Named with the name of the export, the name of the mailbox from which it came, and the date and timestamp that the export commenced. And then perhaps most exciting, at least from my standpoint, is the data that comes out of SharePoint, right? It's been exported in bulk, and it's foldered the way that it's foldered on the server, right? So I get kind of an explorer view of my web page or my site collection, and the pages themselves, to the extent they came out as being responsive documents based on my search query, those come out as MHT files, right? Offline compilations of all the code that comprises that web page, to be viewed in a single file format. So when you're handing this off to your attorney or when you actually have to produce it to the other side, it's not some group of different files that work together to compile a page. It's actually that page shown, you know, giving you the SharePoint experience without actually requiring the network access. So that was a huge advancement, but also the fact that, you know, the documents come out foldered, you know, in the shared document library, they come out as natives. The topics, they come out in lists, community discussion forum would come out as a CSV file. So it's really natural and intuitive way of handing off SharePoint data in bulk, which has just really, really dramatically simplified the eDiscovery process for a lot of people on our team, not just the people who actually do the searching, but the folks who actually used to have to do the collections too. Just absolutely love this. And then, of course, back then, I did include the uncrawlable content, so that gets downloaded with its own subset of data organized in its own manifest file, right? So it's not logged on the known hits manifest file, right? So day one, what I would do is hand off to outside counsel, you know, the raw data itself and then these 2 files, and then I'd get to work on my uncrawlable content and then hand that off once it's been ultimately remediated. There are ways of building queries in bulk. I've got 1 minute left, and I'd love to be able to answer any questions you guys have. So I won't show that now, but it's just it's really made my life a lot easier. I'm able to, you know, get my work done more quickly, get the attorney's eyes on the data, and get them educated and knowledgeable about the case based on the actual facts as defined by the evidence that they'll have access to, a lot more quickly, getting a lot fewer urgent emails saying, deadlines next Thursday, we got to have this tonight, right? If I get that, it's actually easy to comply with as opposed to just saying, sorry, it's going to take me at least a week. So any questions? Yes?
Have you ever had to defend the process before?
I haven't had to defend the process insofar that nobody's come out saying that that it's deficient, and nobody said that we think you missed items based on a tool not being able to find the items, right? Some people challenge our search terms that we use. We try to get buy-off with opposing counsel, and there's meet and confers between our outside counsel and opposing counsel to determine what are the appropriate filters to take. And if they can't agree on something, sometimes there's fights afterwards that Microsoft only searched these custodians for these terms, and we thought that they should search their overall organization for these incredibly vague terms. I want to see everything that says Windows at Microsoft. But nobody said, we think there's problems with your e-discovery process. We want you to, use a different tool. Nobody's come out and said, Microsoft's still using keywords. That's a thing of the past. We want them to use predictive coding. We fight that pretty hard. We don't use predictive coding because it does involve taking 100% of the custodian's raw content and throwing it over the fence beyond your firewall and incurring per gigabyte charges on the, searching the overall corpus, right, which is what we've really tried to move away from. So we'd argue that pretty hard. And so until it's easy to do predictive coding in place, this will be our strategy. Knock on wood, but it as long as we're, following consistent practices, I expect to be able to defend that pretty confidently. Another question?
Searching just exchange content, would you find advantages in the SharePoint thing?
Yeah, so the question is, if I were only searching exchange sources, would I still use this? And my answer is, this being, I'm pointing to something that's not showing, but the SharePoint interface, absolutely. And the reason being, because of the export format, right? I love that EDRM XML manifest file. I love the report showing these are the sources searched, this is who did it, this is what went right, this is what went wrong, these are the filters that were applied to those sources. That just happens automatically. It's automatically downloaded for me in a more usable format than just the Exchange side. So all the time when I've got requests just to search Exchange sources, I'm still going into the eDiscovery Center and doing that. Another question here?
I'm assuming that you have to have SharePoint 2013 to do that.
Yes, this is SharePoint 2013 specific or SharePoint Online. And of course, it's only going to search Exchange 2013 sources as well, right? Yeah. Question here? Okay, so the question is related to licensing. Most of their organization has standard CALs, and this is part of the enterprise SKU, and can they upgrade just a subset of their licenses to the enterprise license? So, for instance, would you only license the mailboxes that you need to put on hold for the enterprise SKU and leave the other ones at standard? I've heard that works. I, again, am in the litigation group, not on the sales side, so what you'd want to do is talk to your sales account team to have them confirm for you beyond the shadow of a doubt, but I've heard of that happening, and I think that's how it works, right? You just need the enterprise license for the folks who are going to be, using the eDiscovery features, and then the folks whose mailboxes are going to be enabled for in-place hold. Quentin, keep me honest, is that right? Yeah, so and then SharePoint CALs, right? Do we need to have the particular site's license? I think it has to do with the users of those sites and the eDiscovery users. So I think you have to make sure your eDiscovery team is outfitted with the proper licenses that'll cover.
It's really about the users you're putting on hold.
Okay.
And then the actual portal
Yes. Nothing special, just out-of-the-box functionality you can spin up. It's like a template, and you spin up the eDiscovery Center site collection, and it's just ready for you. I mean, you need to create the trust relationship between SharePoint and Exchange, and then, of course, to the extent you want to be able to discover and preserve link items, you want to create the relationship between link and Exchange as well. But once you just establish that and set up the right permissions, out-of-box functionality, this is how it's designed to work. Yeah. So, the question is backwards compatibility. Will this allow me to search old versions of Exchange?
No. Did it
exist? Oh, did it exist? So, in Exchange 2010, there was a cross-mailbox search functionality where you can go in and you can run less sophisticated searches against multiple mailboxes and copy the search results from those mailboxes to a discovery mailbox where you could then export to a PST. It's there. It's not something that we used a whole lot at Microsoft. There were instances where we did, but because we're usually searching more than just Exchange and we need to make sure that the search is consistently applied to all those sources, we would tend to just collect all. So we'd use just the new mailbox export request PowerShell command to drop the content from Exchange 2010 to a PST, process that in an offline tool alongside all the rest of the data and search it there. But yes, there's the ability to in Exchange 2010. And if you know, if you're just thinking, let's get our lawyers to filter what they're sending out for review, you can do it. It's there, but it's not as good as this. No, so in SharePoint, there was no way to do, you could search, but you can't take an action based on those search results. You can't search and export this search results, and that's why this is so exciting, because it really completes the eDiscovery story for SharePoint sources, right? Not only did SharePoint become the hub for eDiscovery activity, but and the front-end UI for it, but it also made the old SharePoint sources that I need to search, that our custodians are interacting with, gave me the solution to be able to actually get that content out, which I never had before. Another question? Yeah. The question is, what do I think the chances are of Microsoft productizing this and splitting the features off and letting it be a standalone to process other tools, right? I think the chances of that are probably slim to none. These are built into the platforms, and they're coming together under the compliance umbrella so that you can actually access this through a unified front end, right? The unified compliance center. But I don't think that's ever going to be a standalone product that will tie into other things. Now, there is ambition to make it so that this can reach other content, right? So you can find ways of getting content, like how I'm doing it with file shares now, tying into other repositories and being able to search those. I think that's different than what you're asking about, though. Keep in mind, again, I'm on the eDiscovery team in litigation. I'm not a product planner. I'm not a marketing guy. I'm not a salesman, and I'm not coming up with strategy for how we monetize these. I'm just customer zero here, so you never know, but I don't think that's the strategy. Yes?
Does it work for, like, if you're a hybrid environment? So can you scan across all of your environment?
So in a hybrid environment, does this work? It's not, you cannot search across premises in SharePoint. So if I'm using SharePoint Online eDiscovery Center to search SharePoint Online content and Exchange Online content, I can't also search SharePoint on-prem. And the converse is true as well. If I'm on-prem using an on-prem eDiscovery Center, I can't search SharePoint Online. Now, Exchange has the ability to search across premises. So if I'm searching, Microsoft has multiple different environments, lots of dog food environments where they're doing, you know, early testing in multiple disparate forests of Exchange mailboxes. And I've got several of those configured to be reachable from my on-prem SharePoint eDiscovery Center. So through my SharePoint on-prem eDiscovery Center, I can reach SharePoint on-prem, Exchange on-prem, and because the way that SharePoint searches Exchange is by making calls to Exchange to tell Exchange to search itself and show its results in SharePoint, because there's a trust relationship between my that on-prem Exchange environment and a dog food online Exchange environment, I can actually do cross-prem that way to reach that content. But we SharePoint won't search across prem yet, or just not at all. I don't know if it'll ever be able to, but I sure would like to have only one eDiscovery Center, and he knows all about that. Yes?
In your entire process, no one from IT is involved.
So the question was, in the entire process, let me get this straight, no one from IT is involved. I wouldn't say no one is involved at all. Day in and day out, I'm responsible for my own fate. But I had to work with IT to make sure that I had the permissions that I needed. So sometimes if I'm, you know, if there's a particular site that is not indexed, I might have to talk to IT and say, hey, I need you guys to add this to the central search index so I can actually interact with it, right? So there's familiarity between legal and IT. But if IT does a perfect job getting everything configured and just trains legal to be able to use this, the idea is that legal's out of their hair, right? This is easy enough, simple enough, GUI-based enough for legal to do what they need and not have to burden IT so much. And so, in general, I would say yes. On a day-to-day, day-in, day-out basis, usually yes. There's no burden on IT. I'm not bothering IT and asking them for help getting my job done. But there's just sometimes configuration things that I need to talk to them about where I'll come across something that isn't permissioned correctly or I don't have adequate access to. But beyond that, it's all us. Yes?
Can you make a comment about exactly what happens? There's a box that says search unsearchable items.
Yeah. So what does the search unsearchable items box do? When I'm exporting the data set, and I'm taking out my known hits, and I'm going to also include the uncrawlable data, it's going to find anything that the indexer, when it was crawling the data, if it wasn't able to extract the text from a certain portion of that file or you know the file in its entirety, it'll flag that file. It knows that it's there, and it knows that it can't search it fully, right? It knows that it couldn't index everything, and so it'll take anything that's flagged as not searchable or partially searchable or just for whatever reason not fully indexed, and it'll download that into a segregated subfolder. So I've got a local copy of it, and then.
Do you expect that to bloat your results or not?
Well, it's not going to bloat my results because it's segregated from the results, right? So I've got the known hits in one set of folders, and then I've got the unknown hits in a separate location. And so yeah, it's going to increase my download size. And there's ways of just exporting the uncrawlable items by themselves without having to get them at the same time as downloading the known hits, right? Which is often something that I'll do proactively is I'll get those first before running my responsiveness searches. But it's not going to pollute my result set.
Right.
Yeah.
You've been compelled in your job to include those because you feel like that's appropriate.
Yes. I include those because I feel like that's part of building a defensible process, right? If I don't want to be accused of taking the easy way out, I feel great about the search indexes, but until I find a time when when including my uncrawlable items results in such a tiny subset of the data that no other tool can actually index either, until that happens, I'm probably going to be doing it. I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy. Have I seen that unsearchable or that foreign language items may have more unsearchable content than English? You know, I haven't made that comparison. Most of our litigation is U.S. based.
I spent several months doing Exchange Online.
Uh huh.
And it was significantly higher
is significantly higher.
Russians and Turkey would search their sites, the percentage of unsearchable items really.
That, I suppose that doesn't surprise me. And maybe that's a point of feedback that the indexing gurus up here can take back. But the idea is that we want the search results to be as reliable as anything out there. And we're, you know, I know they have lofty ambitions to always reduce the amount of uncrawlable content, partially uncrawlable content. So improving search index is a constant goal, and I think it'll just continue improving over time. So, yeah, feedback received. I think that's great to hear. Yes. Yeah. So I thought. So it's 4:15. I thought there was another session in this room. Just do it. All right. Let's do it.
I think there's 30 minutes until the next one.
Oh, it's 4:45. Okay, great. Yeah. Bulk query. As people run for the door. Thanks for coming. So let's say outside counsel gave me these terms, right? And they said, go run these against these custodians. What I would do from my eDiscovery homepage here, right, for this case, is go into queries and not create a new item there, but actually go to the queries page itself. And this gives me the ability to work with this as a list, right? So I'll hit edit this list, and it builds a table view. And I can just copy those in. Now, I have to, every query has to have a name, so I'll give the queries the same name as the search itself, right? But I'll just copy and paste those in, say stop editing the list, and then check those items, right? Deselect the one that's already been done. And go up here to the ribbon and say update statistics. And then a few seconds later, it'll go run these, and because I'm in the service, I guess there's only two searches that can run at a time. It's going to run the first two, get the hits, and then run the second two. But a few seconds later, I'll see these columns populated with data, right? And so slowly but surely, they're coming along. I say slowly, but I know, especially at Nike, I know that you guys are used to waiting weeks for search results in your non-Microsoft tool. So this maybe looks fast. But so it finished, and it gives me my item count and then the volume here. And then at this point, if I want to just take this list and export it to Excel to be able to hand my attorney a nice, pretty hit-by-term report that he or she can go to the meet and confer with, right? Done. Yeah, I hopefully not too hidden. It's basic SharePoint workflow, and yeah, you'd want to show your people, and I showed your team this in my demo to them. But this is something I use constantly. Yeah.
So this is just a way to break out your terms, right?
Right. So it's a way to compare multiple terms at once instead of having to create a new one through the UI or through the GUI and go through the laborious process that I spent most of my demo on today. I can just build them all in bulk, and it's going to go and search the overall case data set, right? Those 549 items that have been preserved for the case. It's going to go run all these searches against all those and report out the number of items and the volume that's being returned per term so that the attorney can go, you know, make comparisons and negotiations based on that information. Have I tired you out? Lots of great questions. Thanks so much for coming. Please do, you know, I always forget to ask people to fill out evaluations, but I do give this talk kind of a lot, usually to smaller groups, but if there's something that I should be covering that I didn't cover for you, number one, come up, ask me now. Number two, let me know in the comments if there's things that I could be doing better that would help you guys understand it better. I'd love to know. But thanks again.